Welcome to the Natural Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Whitfield Cook. Join us as we interview expert clinicians, researchers, and well-being experts from around the world and explore the evidence and application of complementary medicine in global healthcare. The following podcast is intended as professional information for integrative practitioners and as such must not be taken as medical advice. Patients are expressly directed to seek appropriate care from a suitably qualified practitioner. Hi everyone, welcome back to Natural Medicine Podcast. I'm Andrew Whitfield Cook and we're here with Sam Gemmell today. Sam, how are you?
I'm fantastic because I'm hanging out with you, of course.
Fanshare. Now, you're a nutritionist. You teach practitioners about content and marketing, but you also mentor them as well in the land of virtual assistant or VAs. So today we'll be discussing the important factors in hiring and becoming a VA. So can I first start off with you and I have podcasted before on Wellness by Designs, and it was about marketing and content strategy, things like that. So to start off, tell us more about what actually is a VA.
Absolutely. So a lot of people think of VAs as just being, you know, people that answer emails and stuff like that. But technically speaking, a VA can be someone who offers any service that can be offered fully online to a business owner. And that includes things like writing blog content, creating website content, creating websites, managing websites, social media content and engagement, your admin tasks like, you know, ordering supplements, processing invoices, all of that back-end stuff. Setting up and managing platforms and software, including things like course platforms and client management software, even recipe development and meal plan creation are some of the ones that I've seen specifically in the health space that fall under the virtual assistants banner. And the cool thing about being a VA is that you can be a jack of all trades. You can do a mix of everything. You can do a mix of a whole lot of things based on what your clients are asking for help with, or you can specialize in one particular area, which is what I did.
So that's way, way more than what I'd thought of. That requires really like the relinquishing of quite a lot of responsibility. So how do you then find people that are appropriately trained, appropriately motivated to carry out the task? Like where do you use the filters to try and find those people?
Yeah, and listen, even when you find the right people, it can be a bit of a challenge to find the right fit because it's not, like you said, there is that level of giving control over to someone. And quite a few of us that are business owners have a little streak of control issues in there. I should know, I've got them. So it can be important to find people that not only have the skills that you're looking for, but that also complement you in terms of your personality and the way that you are supported best. So I like to look for things such as no matter how new or experienced the VA is, they should always be able to offer you a formal client agreement or contract, something to set the boundaries for both of you and help you to understand what the relationship is going to look like. I look for, in terms of budget, a lot of the time, if you're tight on a budget, you're going to need someone a little bit newer, but then you also need to keep in mind that you might need to hold their hand a little bit more when you're setting up. Whereas more experienced VAs, we tend to charge more, especially if we specialize in an area, but we are really good if you just like throw us in the pond and say, you know, here are the bare necessities. Can you just go ahead and start creating things for us? So that's where the border is in terms of budget versus experience.
Yeah, yeah. Was this always your bag? Was tech always your thing that you just grasped right from the beginning of becoming a practitioner? Because you've been there, you've done that yourself, and then you've changed. The word is pivoted, isn't it? But you've changed direction into your real love, your real drive. Were you always like that? And what drove you to sort of change your focus?
As with majority of things that have happened throughout my career as a practitioner and as a human, I completely fell into it by accident. I moved into the world of writing and content creation because my own clinic was absolutely abysmally failing. I'm very upfront about the fact that as a nutritionist, I lost $10,000 in my business in the first 3 months of starting because I didn't know what I was doing in terms of my content and my marketing. And one way that I could market myself, especially back, you got to keep in mind, this was about 6-7 years ago. That was back when you had a lot of those, like those big blogs that pulled a whole lot of content from guest writers. So I was writing for things like that. There was one called Natural Beauty Expert. As an Endeavor graduate, I was writing blogs for Endeavor's blog as well. And then I just kind of tripped on a website that told me that I could get paid to write blogs for people. And I actually was writing blogs, not just specifically for health practitioners to start with. I was writing blogs for a Mediterranean restaurant in Sydney and a wedding venue and like a car service. And then one of my friends sort of turned around to me and she's like, why don't, you know, there's so many health practitioners out there that need to have content. Why don't you just, you know, focus in on them? And so that's what I did. And I didn't realize, because no one was talking about it, I didn't realize how many practitioners out there were looking for people to support their business so that they could focus on what they do best, which is working with their clients.
Okay, but that's like, you've really got a journalistic flair. If you can write content for natural medicine, which is your career, but you can also write things for a restaurant, which it, yeah, okay, it's linked. I can get that link. But a car thing? I mean, that's journalistic flair. Tell us about your background here. Parents in writing or what?
Not at all. My background before studying was pretty much just sales and retail, you know, working at Pet Barn, working at Woolies. I even did about a year and a half as a kids party entertainer on this amazing double-decker bus called the Gym Bus. I loved English during high school, so I always loved writing, and all of my family are bookworms. But I'm the first real journalist, and I'm very proud to hear, I heard just yesterday, that my niece has inherited that, and she's already writing multiple things for the school newsletter.
Sweet.
And we'll be entering, hopefully, a young journalist competition this year.
Oh, good on her. So it is genetic. No.
I think I had the mutation to pass on.
But that, like, that's really a thing. Like, that's a feather in your cap to have that journalistic flair to write across different streams or different specialties, not just one that you're is your career path, but something totally different. That's real flair. So how do you find others when you're mentoring? People might want to, but how do you find those that really have that spark? They've got it.
Yeah, there are certain things that I look for. So I do teach people both through, I've got a course specifically for health VAs, and I'm also creating a program at the moment for sort of a small group support system. But the thing that I look for in terms of the people that I'm most likely to refer work onto is there's a few things, because skills, at the end of the day, we can teach skills. Even within my own scope, I can teach someone how to be a better writer. I can teach them how to write blogs for SEO. I can teach them things around social media. And we can always, you know, jump on the latest social media platform, because there seems to be one that drops every other year at the moment. So you can always teach that, but it's the qualities that make the real difference for a great VA. And some of the most important ones I look for are resilience, because you will always have clients who aren't a good fit for you, who will make you feel like a failure. Not necessarily that they make you feel it, but you feel like a failure for not being able to serve them as well as you want to. Intuition and initiative are really big ones. My VIP clients, I'll often turn around to them and be like, hey, I noticed this isn't in your links, or, you know, I noticed that this is a gap where you could be, you know, really improving yourself. So I communicate that to them. And a commitment to ongoing growth and learning. And the other thing is that there is a very good chance if you're going to be a great VA, you're going to be either an introvert or at least you don't need to be around people 24/7 to fill up your cup. Because at the end of the day, you're going to be spending an awful lot of time on your laptop.
So this is really interesting about finding that right personality that can write. You need somebody that can connect with humans in the written word, can convey emotion, that emotional pull of writing. I want to learn more, but they don't need that human face-to-face interaction. That's a skill. That's, can that be taught, or is that something that must be intrinsic, like the classic introvert?
I find that it's kind of there already. I find if someone is naturally introverted, they've already learned that they're better at communicating, even things like via email and via text, rather than, you know, when the phone rings, I'm like, oh God, no, I don't want to answer that. I'm going to put it away, unless it's someone like my partner or my mom. Yeah. So you'll be able to see that those people are already naturally better at communicating via the written word anyway. They just don't necessarily realize that that's a skill that they can use in their business.
Okay, so here's an idea. Then you've got the opposite end of the spectrum, total peacocks like myself, right? Total, just shocking. I have these ideas that whiz round my brain for practitioners such as myself to then put that on paper. There's another, oh, it's like squirrel. You know, I've gone. So with people like me, should we be employing the VA, giving them the ideas and say, I want to talk about this. These are the things, da-da-da, create something for me. Is that how it works?
Absolutely. That's what I've done for many, many, many practitioners before. And a lot of the people who have learned under me also do the same. So with someone like you, for example, because you're already out there creating content in a different form, so for you, it's video and podcasting, the content's already there. All we need to do is take that content and transform it into the written word. Gotcha. I can take a podcast episode and turn it into at least half a dozen social media posts, a blog, two or three, depending on how long it is. And you can even transform it into things like video scripts for like paid courses, for example.
Okay, so let's say a practitioner in clinic, naturopath, nutritionist, herbalist, and their heads down, bum up, trying to care for their patients, make a living, but they need to grow their practice. They need to broaden the cup, if that's a term at all. But anyway. So do you then say, okay, let's have half an hour and set out what your strategy should be like, what content you should have, and then you go, okay, what's your favorite thing? What do you love to do? What was your last five client? What were your last five clients? What did they come in to see you for? And then you can create content around that. Is that how it works?
At least in my business, that's exactly how it works. So gotcha. When I work with VIPs, we'll jump on calls like this. The longer they work with me, it's less often. But to start with, it's every 3 months or so. And we'll sit down and we'll go, okay, what do you want to be promoting this quarter? You know, like you said, what topics have come up in your clinic? You know, are there things that are topical that you're really interested in at the moment? One of my VIPs recently, you know, jumped on talking about the Ozempic trend because she works with women in perimenopause, and women in perimenopause who are struggling with their weight are looking for any solution possible. So we completely derailed her content plan for the month and added this blog in because it was so topical and because she was getting great traction with it on her socials as well. So we pull all of this together, throw in a little bit of strategy, and then go, all right, let's talk about it. I will record it and take notes. And then from there, I just expand it out and you've got a blog, usually some social media posts, even a newsletter, depending on their package.
Yeah, and everybody, we don't necessarily need a drug. Yes, it can help people, but let's remember myo and osatol, bitter melon, chromium.
Yes. All of the things well. That don't have all of the quite things. As many side effects.
It's really like it's the thing that upsets me is I get the off-label use. I understand it's useful. I understand it's helped people. I get that. And it's helped people avoid, you know, serious morbidity in certain issues, in certain instances. But my concern is that all of this media trend is has taken away from those people that medically can't do without it. That's my issue.
Definitely. And that's
okay.
That was definitely a little bit of like our behind the scenes feel. And we definitely had a little bit of rant about that as well. But then it's transforming it into something that allows you to communicate that with lay people who don't think about things like that. You know, they just want a solution to their problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, social media and blogs and magazines have all told them that this is the latest thing, this is the latest trend. So being able to sort of get them to pause and be like, okay, I might not be able to get my hands on this. It might not be a good fit because of the side effects. What else can I do? And that's where that blog post sort of led more into, okay, what can you do about perimenopausal weight issues then? Because, you know, sure, Ozempic is a great band-aid, but you stop taking it, the problem's still going to be there.
Yeah. Okay, so you create the content, you put it out. What do you have to think of? What do you have to be cognizant of and take advantage of to make sure that your reach is expanding, that you're actually getting to those patients that are in need of your services? This is practitioner. I'm speaking as the practitioner here. So they'll come to you. How do you get their message out so that it has greatest reach, greatest effect?
It does really depend on the practitioner and who they're working with, but we do use different strategies. Things like collaborations with other practitioners and brands is a really great one. Doing things like podcasts allows people to reach more people. And let's be honest, podcast people are always looking for more people to interview, aren't they?
Hell yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Hell yeah.
And it's a lot easier if someone approaches you and says, hey, this is what I do. This is how I help people. Are we a good fit? Rather than you having to go out and scout for people who are the right fit for a podcast. So you've got things like collaborating on podcasts. You also have things, I personally use things like share competitions when I am promoting something in my own business. So if someone enrolls in one of my free or low cost things and I'm doing a bit of a launch for it, I'll send out an email and be like, hey, I'm trying to get the word out to more people. Can you drop a comment on this Facebook post and share it? And in return, you go into the draw to win, I don't know, a one-on-one appointment with me, whatever it is that's valuable, but not necessarily what you're purchasing. So you don't want to be like, hey, come and join my package, but then you get the package for free if you win. Like that doesn't quite work. Yeah. But if you turn around and say, I'll add a one-on-one appointment or I'll add on, you know, a special gift pack for whoever wins, that's a really handy one to do. And you do want to do that via email or newsletter rather than doing it directly on Facebook or Instagram, just so that you don't sort of mess up their terms and conditions as well. So there's lots of different ways that you can get your word out to more people. It will always be changing depending on the platforms that you're using, the people that you're trying to reach. All sorts of things will affect it, but there is always a way that you can be reaching more people.
Okay, so what you said was interesting back there about affecting terms and conditions. So we're talking ethical boundaries, correct?
Absolutely.
You know, so can you take us through just a few things of what practitioners have got to be mindful of?
Yeah, absolutely. So first up, when you are running things like a share competition, you do want to make sure that you're not talking about it directly on things like Facebook or Instagram, because a lot of the times you will be going against their terms and conditions. You'll notice when big brands do it, they will specifically add at the bottom of the caption that it is not affiliated with Meta or Facebook or Instagram in order to cover themselves. But I just find it's a better connection anyway if you're emailing people about it. It's a little bit more personal and it means that more people are going to see it. Another common one that I see with practitioners is starting up a secondary personal Facebook profile that they use as a business tactic.
Yep.
This is actually against Facebook terms and conditions, and I feel like I need to say this one until I am blue in the face. You are not supposed to use a personal Facebook profile solely to promote your business. You can absolutely share things on your personal page from time to time, and you will get better reach. And that's why people are taught to use it. But Facebook can shut you down and delete you if they find out that you are using a personal profile solely for the purpose of promoting a business.
Gotcha. So this is something that really interests me because, like, I've got my personal profile where I try and restrict that to family and friends and, my trips with my wife and sharing that with our friends, that sort of stuff. But people know my name. So instead of going to my page, they want to connect with me. And I understand that. That personal connection is what people really crave. But it would, like, I don't share any business or commercial content on there at all. The page is where I do, if you like, business. Is that correct? Is that hunky dory?
That is absolutely what you should be doing. I
Okay.
do understand that some people will have a second profile set up
Yeah.
where it might say something like, Andrew Whitfield Cook, naturopath, where people, they add like their practitioner friends and stuff like that. And that's a bit more of like a secondary profile. But if you're using that profile to solely promote yourself and your business,
Yep.
that's against Facebook T's and C's.
Got it. How very interesting. Okay, so here's the thing. People want to connect with you personally. I reserve that for family and friends. You then go onto their Facebook page and say, "Hey, I noticed that you recently want to connect. I reserve that for family and friends, but here's my page if you want to connect here." Is that what you do?
You can do that. Honestly, I'm a lot more, I guess, open when it comes to connecting with people. You've also got options like in terms of things like Instagram stories, you can actually have a set of close friends. So if there is something that you want to be sharing that's a little bit more personal to you, you can have that list with just your family and close friends on it.
All
And then
right.
when you go to share it, you can click to close friends only. So they have brought in things that allow you to sort of have different filters of how you can connect with people. But also, I am just of the generation where I'm the generation where technology came in. So, and there are some fantastic inebriated photos of me online, thanks to that. So I've learned that, a lot of the things that I send are strictly in Facebook Messenger and Instagram Messenger. And I tend to be very careful with what I share on my profiles. And therefore, I've got over 1,000 friends on Facebook because most of them are practitioners who have wanted to connect with me.
I love what you said about generation, because I am of the generation where I thought using an FBOSS machine was using a computer. So, anyway, there's a whole backstory there about me trying to learn about what was a computer. I have to ask, were most of those inebriated photos after a Natex event in celebration of
Oh
the things
goodness,
that
no,
Tammy did?
it was much, much longer back in the past than that.
All right.
That was back in the good old days of being 21. And because I'd been so ill in my teens with thyroid cancer, by the time I got to 21 and I was finally recovered, I was kind of making up for lost time. So that was before I studied nutrition.
Hang on, Sam. Like, I knew that you had EDS, but I didn't know that you had gone through your journey with thyroid cancer as well. That's very young.
It does. It's one of the cancers that tends to turn up in teenage girls the most.
Blown away. Had no idea.
Yeah.
Wow. There's a podcast we'll have.
Yet another one. We'll add it to the list.
Yet another one. Okay, so let's get back to the topic. Practitioners. They think they need a VA. They want to get their focus on clinical practice, but they need their hopper to be filled. They need new clients to care for. So what should they do when searching out a VA? Where do they come to? What do they look for? How do they find the right match?
Yeah, so first up, please don't go looking for a VA before you have any idea of what you want to outsource. you'd be surprised how many practitioners come to me and say, I want to start working with a VA. And I'm like, great. What do you want to outsource to them? I'll see who I can find for you. And they're like, I don't know. So my rule of thumb is for an entire week or month, depending on how your business works, take an entire week or month, write down every single task that you do in your business. And once you've written them all down and, you know, note how many times a week or month you do them, then rank them based on how exhausted you are after doing them and how much time they take you. So the more that it drains you to do a task, the more you procrastinate on a task, and the longer it takes for you to do it, the higher up that list it should be in terms of outsourcing. One of my first VIP clients used to take 6 hours to write a 500-word blog because she was constantly overanalyzing what she was writing. She was constantly checking as she went, and it was just exhausting for her. And I would write the same blog for her in 45 minutes because I didn't do any of those things. But the thing is that after working with me for a few years over the pandemic, when her business had to shut down because of pandemic laws that were very silly around myotherapy, because of that, she knew how to write blogs a lot quicker because she could see the structure I was using, the topics we were covering, the way that we broke them down, and it became sort of second nature to her. So you can also learn from your VA how to better run your business in case you ever do have to take back over those duties as well.
Okay. And also, what if a natural health practitioner was interested in becoming a VA? What steps should they take, and what should they really think about their qualities to be able to offer?
Yeah. So I actually have a fantastic free resource that helps them to explore exactly that. So it is called The Ultimate Guide to Becoming a Rockstar VA. And I will be making sure that you have the link for that in the show notes. But basically, it's because I was getting asked this constantly, especially once I launched my VA course, people were asking me over and over the same questions. You know, what should I offer? Who should I be working with? You know, what should I price my services at? What else do I need to be thinking about? I just decided to put it into a guide. And so far, over the last time I checked, over 425 people have downloaded that guide to suss out their options. Now, there's certainly not 425 new VAs out there because it's not a fit for everyone.
Yeah.
But it's a really good starting point to explore your options and see if it is a good fit for you.
But you know what? I also see that as a good way of looking at what people should, what skill sets they should be looking for in hiring a VA. So it's a double-pronged action, if you like, double-pronged use. Can I ask as well, you said about the questionnaire of what things do you spend what time on, how much, how important is it, that sort of thing. Have you ever thought of creating a questionnaire that goes through all of these things to then offer and say, well, fill that out, then come back to me and we can chat?
It's like you've had a look into my to be done folder on my computer. So there is, it's been in the works for a little while, and it's got bumped a few times for other projects, but I do also have the hiring a VA alternative to that, that free guide for becoming a VA. I am in the process of creating one for hiring a VA. So that's in the works, because that's, again, something that I get asked a lot, because on top of everything else that I do in the VA space, I also do have a virtual job board where I send out, when people contact me saying, hey, I want a VA to do this, I've got a list of people with, the last time I checked, 85 or so VAs on the list, including 60 that have worked with me. So I send out jobs to them, and people will email me all the time and be like, oh, you know, I don't know this, I don't know that. And myself and my own VA, Sarah, have to ask them the same questions over and over. So we are working on creating a guide that allows you to walk through what you're looking for, what your realistic budget is, and how to handle it when someone's not a good fit as well, because that does happen. Yeah. And it's important that both sides understand how to deal with that in a way that no one gets personally upset. No one gets hurt. No one damages someone else's business. You just go, okay, cool, we're not a fit. Let's get out of this and move on.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Sam. So I was just going to answer to your question about before about looking into your thing. I've just come across as this tech nerd, but I'm actually like a really high ranking hacker. no. But Sam, just as the last question, like everybody's going to watch this and go, okay, well, find out more. Sam Gemmell, what's your website? How do we find out more about what you do, what they can do, how they can find help?
Yeah. So first up, you've got SamanthaGemmell.com, all one word. I will listen. I try to stay on top of my website with how many different things I bring out. It's not always a guarantee that my website will have everything that I'm offering, particularly the new things. You'll also find a link through to my my courses and my products on the website as well. That's usually pretty up to date. And of course, my socials as well. So it's Sam the Health Writer on both Facebook and Instagram. Honestly, that is the best place to stay up to date with what I'm offering at the time, because I am someone who comes up with new ideas all the time, new ways to help people. And whenever I'm testing an idea or launching an idea, my socials and my email lists are the first ones to find out about it. I roll something out, make sure that it's something that's of value. And then once I know that, it ends up on my website.
Gotcha. So Samantha Gemmell, which is GEMMELL.
Correct.
.com, not AU.
No AU here. I'm no an international AU. Gal.
Wow. Well done to you. I love chatting with you and I learn something new every time. Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your wealth of experience and showing how you help others to help others to help others. Like, it's this whole chain of what you do. So well done. You're an amazing woman.
It is. And honestly, when I think about it, that's what it always came back to. When I was sort of offering these services to start with, people would always sort of ask my why and my mission. And I was always able to distill it back to, I want to help people to help more people and have that ripple effect with other people across the globe. And, you know, through my own VIP clients alone over the last few years, my content has reached over 1 million people because I have worked with some people with some pretty big followings online. But then I've also worked with 60 VAs and their ability to help, you know, even if they help another 10 practitioners, that's 600 practitioners that they've helped, that I've helped, and it just continues on. So, you know, those 600 practitioners could have 1,000 clients each, and you think about the ripple effect that then has on the people that they love. So that's always been my big thing, is to be at the start of that ripple effect for people.
Absolutely incredible what you've done, what you've achieved, and all from our meeting at a Natex some years ago when we did a brief interview. I'm so impressed with you, Sam, really. Just incredible woman. Well done to you.
Cheeky post-Natex whisky together.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us today, for your company. So you can find all of the research, all of the links we'll put up on naturalmedicinepartners.com.au, and I'll put it in the show notes of the podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today. This is Andrew Whitfield Cook, Natural Medicine Podcast. You're amazing.
I love how off track we got.
But it was all pertinent. It was all good. I like that.
It was. And it really, because of the extra sort of questions you asked, it really weaves in nicely with our last one as well. Mm.